one yes to God by the second had oriented humanity toward salvation. Let us suppose even Mary. Purely and simply on one side there is the woman who believes the words of the fallen angel and doubts the divine word, who disobeys in the hope of becoming like God, and finally causes the flood of suffering and sin which submerge the world. The other who believes what is said to her on the Lord's part, has no other ambition than to be his humble servant and become a gushing spring of all graces. Mary is in a sense the living antithesis of her unhappy ancestor. But she is first and foremost the glory of Eve, the daughter of the promise, of that mysterious promise made by God to the sinful couple in the form of a curse on Satan. I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed, he shall crush your head and you shall lie in wait for his heel. Exiled from happiness, Adam and Eve carried this promise with them. It was their hope during their labors, in the suffering of childbirth. At the most dramatic moment of all when they weighed the gravity of their sin before the body of their son, Abel. But even then their distant granddaughter was the hope of these first sinners. Thousands of years had passed, generations had succeeded generations before the promise was accomplished. God was not in a hurry. God is not in the habit of forcing his creation. Certainly even a worn-out people could have given rise to Mary Immaculate. That admirable exception, the flower in the middle of thorns. But that is not his way. He never demands fruits out of season from his creatures. He respects the laws of maturation. Mankind raises itself little by little, step by step, under the impetus of this powerful ferment of divine grace, toward more love, toward more sanctity, toward Mary. Amongst all the peoples of the earth, God chose one that he blessed and with whom he made an alliance. But Israel multiplied her infidelities, then God swept his house with a great breath of war and reserved his blessing for the few who came back purified by exile. But they quickly forgot the catastrophes and the lessons which they taught. The divine blessing was withdrawn from the powerful, the proud, the grasping, and was concentrated on a small Jewish elite without pomp or power who were called Anoim, the poor, the humble, the hungry. It is among them that God discerns the one whose whole spirit is conveyed in the words, I am the handmaid of the Lord. It is Mary, the crowning glory of Israel, the crowning glory of humanity. She is the woman. Her destiny was to tie together the three aspects of the vocation of woman, virginity, marriage, and maternity, and to bring them to an unequaled perfection. We can say with Leon Bloy, the more saintly a woman is, the more a woman she is. To examine the meaning of this destiny we will meditate on Mary in her relation to God, to Joseph, to Jesus, and to humanity. To profit from this meditation, we must rid it of all false intellectualism. The mystery of Mary escapes those who want to imprison it in formulas and concepts. It reveals itself only to the pure of sight. It is first of all a question of rediscovering the eye of innocence. The virginity of Mary. We would be badly mistaken were we to represent the interior life of Mary as lofty but immobile. A thriving spirit is never immobile. An incessant dynamism pushes it from within toward progress and new power, and an always greater perfection. And so it was with the spiritual life of Mary, whose intimate source is charity, that love which comes from God and goes to God. From her birth, Mary loved her God with an unrivaled love which never knew hesitation. Stage by stage this love grows and intensifies, until the day when she leaves the earth, having acquired such an unimaginable perfection that we have only a hint of her radiance in space and time. Thus the true history of Mary's assumption in the love of God will never be written because it is the secret of God. However, the Lord does allow us glimpses of the great stages of this evolution. It is safe to say that meditation on the Word of God was the great factor of Mary's progress in love. This meditation was familiar to all young Jews. But Mary possessed, above all others, purity of heart, insight, and attention. Thus when, years later, A woman in the crowd raised her voice and called to Jesus, "Blessed be the womb that bore thee, and the breasts that nursed thee." He replied, "Blessed rather are those who hear the word of God and keep it," wishing by that to call attention to the fact that the glory of his mother is not so much in the order of the flesh as in the order of faith. Frequent recourse to the scriptures initiated Mary to the high idea of God which dominates the whole history of her people. He is the transcendent, the almighty, the holy, he who must never be represented in images, he whose lordship is recognized by the sacrifice of the first fruits, from the time they are consecrated to him until the victim is entirely consumed by the Holocaust. It is the God who prefers the completely interior sacrifice of a pure and penitent heart to the immolation of goats and bulls. This theology is the spiritual nourishment of Mary. It should not be astonishing then that her soul, marvelously childlike and pure, had looked for a secret sacrifice she could offer to the Lord. She resolved to consecrate her virginity in order to render homage to the sanctity of God, to offer witness of her love to him, which she was impatient to prove. The originality and the scope of this gesture is made clear if you recall that with the Jews maternity was not only a human glory for woman, but the best proof of God's blessing on her. Virginity was the invention of a higher love. How old was Mary? Authors dispute the point. Some think she made this vow at an early age, others that she had the desire very early but did not make the vow until her marriage. I would support those who believe it was in the adolescent years, when every young girl has a fervent desire to be something for someone. When she discovered the aspiration to marriage and maternity in her heart, Mary doubtless understood that she could renounce it and sacrifice by that very fact the chance to give birth to the Messiah, that by this renunciation of the human vocation of woman, it would become more truly the gift of God, the thing by which he could do his will. An Italian painting creates an intense image of the moment of this gift of the young Mary. She mounts the imposing steps of the temple by herself, at the foot of which her parents whom she had left watch her, while at the top the high priest awaits her. We could never emphasize too much what initiative, decision, and joy there was in this act of the Virgin, as in others throughout her life. There is no passivity in her, all is readiness to act. In a climate of peace, cheerfulness and flexibility, from which the least trace of tension is absent, she is intensely alive. That tension which is a weakness of the flesh is not present in her in whom everything is purely spiritual. It is the least visible flames which are the most intense. By this offering Mary pledged much more than herself, she pledged the people of Israel and in a larger sense, the humanity of which she was the miraculous child. She represents them, leads them, commits them. In her and by her they are consecrated to the living God. The old world, writes Bemanos, the painful world, the world before grace, hoped for her a long time in its sorrowful heart, for centuries and centuries, in the obscure, incomprehensible hope of a Virgo genitrix. For centuries and centuries with its old hands heavy with sins, it protected the marvelous girl whose name was unknown to the world. And now these hands have just presented a spotless offering to the Lord. In this girl we find new meaning in the great law of solidarity. Eve, the mother of the race, disobeyed and the whole race was exiled from God. Mary gives herself and in her this same human race offers itself entirely to saving love. Now God can realize his ancient promises. The state of consecrated virginity was inaugurated, one might say invented, by Mary. Henceforth, a multitude of women following Mary, the Virgin par excellence, the Holy Virgin, will be bound in this state which maintains in the Church a reserve of purity which benefits all the faithful. But it is important not to confuse Christian virginity with the temporary situation of the girl whose virginity has no spiritual significance. We must also point out concepts which are inexact if taken individually. One is limited to a physical and sociological point of view of virginity, the renunciation of marriage. The other exclusively conveys the point of view of a consecration to God which is purely interior or spiritual. These two conceptions must not be separated, they are complementaries. By the vow of virginity, woman solemnly consecrates her body to God and renounces marriage, but this consecration has meaning in the measure that it is the sign of a consecration of the soul to God, with the hope of a perfection of love. The state of virginity may not be the vocation of all women, yet this perfection to which virginity gives witness is the end which every Christian soul must seek. Consecrated virgins have a mission to recall this goal to the faithful, who are always tempted to forget it. It is an essential aspect of their vocation, and die reason die church holds them in such high esteem. Mary and Joseph. Today the girls who vow their virginity to God find protection and companionship in various institutes. The state of virginity was unknown in Israel. There was no other solution for Mary than marriage, a marriage which would be a guarantee of virginity. The Father had chosen Mary above all women to be the mother of his Son, and he had formed Joseph by his grace, above all men, to be her husband. I say husband, and not in the sense of a legal guardian, an octogenarian as the past generation imagined, incapable of conceiving a young heart at the same time respectful and tender, chaste and ardent. The priests of today who have heard the confessions of many young men do not share this difficulty. They know that continence and virility are not incompatible. When did Joseph meet Mary? We do not know. Since they were both descendants of David and perhaps both originally of Nazareth, it is not improbable that they knew each other for a long time. Our ignorance of the exact nature of the meeting invites us to recall the marriage of the just in the ancient law, an Isaac of whom it is said, he welcomed Rebekah and made her his wife and found comfort over the loss of his mother in his love for her. Jacob, who for long years had to serve his brothers-in-law to acquire Rachel, but these 7 years were as several days because he loved her, Tobias and Sarah. But at least we can imagine the marriage ceremony, thanks to the gospel parables. When night fell, Joseph, with his companions carrying the torches, walked to the home of his fiancée. Mary, at awned, awaited, surrounded by young maids with lighted lamps. The arrival of Joseph was greeted with cheering, which contrasts with the discreet and grave joy of Mary. The procession festively crosses the village to the sound of flutes and tambourines, conducting the young fiancée to her husband's home. Great silence envelops this union, and yet we can say without paradox that it is better known than many others, for we have the certitude that they love each other. They love each other with a love which ours cannot approach. Nevertheless, we can imagine it as an extension of the transport of our own hearts. Joseph must have felt something of the wonder of the first man before the first woman. All that in him is made for admiration, love, and homage. Awakens and turns itself to Mary. He knows that a blessing of God has been delivered into his hands and that he must wait upon her with an earnest solicitude. He knows that this girl who entrusted herself to him with such a perfect trust and submission is his master in the ways of God. Beatrice looked on high and I looked to her. It is truer still of Joseph and Mary than of Dante and Beatrice. The life of man is fixed, it has found its center. Mary is in his possession and he surrounds her on all sides. A woman conquered his heart bit by bit, and now it is prudent and paternal. Once again he is in paradise with Eve. The face of her whom all humanity needs is turned with love and submission to Joseph Paul Claude, Saint Joseph. It is still more daring to try to say what the love of Mary for Joseph was. Without risk of error, one can imagine her fervent gratitude toward him to whom it had been so easy to confide the vow made to the Lord. He did not speak much that day, but his glance had been ample reassurance to the young virgin. From that time on she looked to him, to his person, and to his family with great joy. He is her strength. She is his peace. While abandoning herself to him like a happy child, a maternal love for him grew in her, eager to see the grace of the Lord fructified in his human heart. Yes, a very perfect conjugal love binds them,